You're listening to Mike and Kristen,
the podcast.
I'm Mike, a musician, writer, and producer.
And I'm Kristen, a painter, writer, and designer.
Our show is all about following dreams, taking chances, and what life as an artist is really about.
Together, we bring you weekly guest interviews and thought-provoking conversations.
Let's go! What's up, Kristen Ray Harrington?
I was going to kick this one off.
Okay, you start it then. Go.
Hello, friends in podcast land. Welcome to another episode of Mike and Kristen. Michael S. Ryan, how are you doing this week?
What a good job. You nailed it.
See how enthusiastic that was?
Jeez.
You usually ask me how I'm doing and I feel put on the spot sometimes. So I'm turning the tables. And how are you doing?
Not too bad. My leg has thawed out.
Good.
It's not... numb. It still
is a good word, I think.
Still is kind of
state it was in.
Sore, and my calf is kind of, I guess, pulled or something. But yeah, the numbness is gone from our 171 kilometers walked at South by Southwest, which we recounted in the last episode. But that's feeling better. We are in LA right now.
We are. Should all have gone according to plan. Yeah. That's where we are in this under the sunny skies of Los Angeles at our third and final podcast conference.
Yeah, this is crazy. Orlando for Podfest, South by Southwest in Austin, and now we're at Evolutions in LA, learning every single thing we can about how to make this the best podcast possible. And how to deliver just, you know, great content for the people that tune in every week.
Well, maybe we should ask our listeners, what do you guys think? Are we getting better?
Are we
improving?
Are we getting any gooder out there,
buds? Has this been worth it?
Well, I think we're a little bit gooder, Kristen.
We do have a lot of things we've yet to implement or change.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. Things are only going to get stronger and better is the point. I'm also... pleasantly, I don't want to say surprised, but I'm grateful that each of these conferences have offered different things, different speakers, different learning insights, all of that, because there's a risk of them being redundant going to three all at once. But I've found each has something unique to offer. So.
And we're able to target our learning to what we want in that specific conference. So at Podfest, we really looked at growth and ways to improve in that area. And at this one we're at right now, we didn't record this in advance. We're in LA. This is live in your ears. We'll kind of, we know everything in the world about podcast growth. We'll just look at the other areas now, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
No, I'm just saying we have the options to take in different learning environments and be exposed to new ideas from different people. It might even be the same topic, but when you have a different speaker or a different podcast host who has achieved success in their area, there's always lots to learn from.
We're fortunate that there's two of us so we can divide and conquer at times as well. All of these conferences have often multiple sessions happening at the same time of day. So it benefits us to be able to split up and bring back our learnings to one another.
Yeah, if it makes sense, for sure.
Yeah, and some are just very niche, applicable to us, so it makes sense that we're both in that room.
So we have Amanda Ring with us today, but let's get into our thoughts and things first.
Thoughts and things, thoughts and things, thoughts and things, thoughts and things.
So I whipped one out from memory.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, I found this.
Is this from the Google?
The Google found this. We wanted to find something spiritual, which will help describe Amanda and her outlook and everything she does. So this is what we came up with. We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. By Pierre Teilhard de Chardin.
Oh, great accent.
Français.
I think you should do the rest of the intro in that. In
bonjour.
That French. Perfect French voice.
Comment ça va? Est-ce que je peux aller à la toilette?
That's the extent of Mike's French. But that was great. That was well done.
Yeah.
I've heard this quote before. I think it's a really beautiful reminder for our listeners and for us to be thinking about our life in this way. Amanda embodies this to the fullest degree, which we'll get to her outlook on life and practice in life. But specific to this way of thinking, this is something that makes me feel liberated in that we're being guided, and thinking of ourselves as spiritual beings gives us a little bit more power within ourselves. Mm-hmm. It gives us trust in the universe. And really thinking about having a human experience is just but one experience that potentially our souls or our spiritual beings get to have.
I like that you can look at spirituality in a way that's not religious, but still have that feeling of connection and the greater power out there. You don't have to necessarily believe in what's in the Bible or something, but you can be spiritual and have this connection to something much bigger and feel that, I guess, faith in the universe or whatever you want to call it, even just nature or just the cosmos guiding us. And if you do believe in God in that sense, in the biblical sense or whatever religion is you may follow, like, that's cool too. But I just like the idea of spirituality in just the broad sense. And I think most people are that in some way.
I would say more people nowadays, or perhaps just within our network, would describe themselves as spiritual but not religious.
Yeah.
And it strikes me funny in a way that there's almost this defensiveness or like, I want you to know I'm not religious, as though it's a bad thing.
Well, there are a lot of bad things associated with religion, I guess.
I suppose, but I feel that at its essence, it's meant to represent the same types of ideologies and practices as any spiritual practice would.
Yeah.
Like, they all have in common this idea of love and community and healing and acceptance, which is what Amanda teaches.
Yeah.
I mean, she too, I would describe as a spiritual being. She's not advocating for any one religion, but just to say that they have that in common regardless.
And she discusses some super interesting things. And I like how she comes at it all in a logical way. And she knows that some people might look at it in maybe a woo-woo way, but she knows that. And
yeah.
She understands that some people are going to look at it like that, but she has this amazing ability to convey her message and just do that in a way that feels just completely real and honest, and because it is.
It's accessible. What I really love about Amanda, not only as a person, but in her teachings, is that she recognizes this isn't for everyone, and she doesn't want it to be, and it doesn't have to be. And that could be said for any one person, any one art. Like, we say that about ourselves. Like, my paintings aren't for everyone.
Yeah,
this podcast isn't for everyone.
My music.
Exactly. And but the people who it's for, she is just the goddess queen of this world.
Yeah.
I really feel like if this is work that you're interested in, she is the person I would recommend 100% to start that with. And part of it is because she is, aware that there's a certain approach for different people. She does one-on-one work, group work, virtual work. She has her own podcast that is absolutely brilliant. She was born to do this. She was born to speak. And so I really feel like she takes the time to, like, know her audience, I guess you might say.
Yeah.
Be that one person or a group of people. She wants to tune into what that person needs and the best approach to help guide them through that.
Well, with anything, it's a big and important thing to be self-aware and aware of how people are perceiving what you're saying and how they're reacting to what you're saying and what you're putting out there. And she just goes about it in such a great way, and she wants to help people. She wants to make people feel better and show them what they're capable of. And it was a really good chat with her.
Her sense of intuition and awareness is something that she's felt since she was a child, too. Yeah. I mean, if there's ever a better example of somebody being born to do the work that they're doing,
yeah,
she's that.
Amanda Ring. Great name, too.
Amanda Ring. We just love her. Yeah. Thanks so much, Amanda, for being here. We know our audience is just going to get so much out of this episode.
Well, let's get into it. Us and Amanda Ring chatting.
Let's do it. Ooh. And because you've mentioned mentors, I would love to know, how do you find mentors, or how do they find you?
In the work that I do?
Yeah.
Well, it's been a process of following what has been of interest to me, mm-hmm. what I've been called to explore personally for healing work and professionally. And then through that, I have connected with people that became mentors mm-hmm. for me. And some have stayed and some have, you know, just been for a season, as it were.
Yeah.
And I feel that's important too, because like any relationship, there's some things are meant to be for a specific reason, for a specific amount of time, and that's it. And then it's meant to evolve, you know? So
that can be said for all relationships.
100%.
It's funny, I'm part of a group of women right now that we're going through a virtual program, and it came up the other night about, it feels more natural, or we've been given more tools to think about romantic relationships and how sometimes those have an expiration date. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to other relationships in our life, be it friendship or sometimes family or a mentor even,
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit trickier to know when that has served its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Have you encountered that?
Hmm. Yeah, I would say I have. And it's like, you just, it's a felt sense of knowing like there's more effort required to find the connection. And I also feel like once you receive the bit of guidance that you need, you just feel like, okay, I'm ready to move forward with something else. And it feels complete. So I would say that's one reason. That's one way that I know it's that it feels complete. And I think also with like other relationships and mentorship, you're more engaged for a certain period of time, then you're integrating what you're receiving. So you may not be as actively engaged in the continuous contact, but there's a space of integration and then you might reconnect again. Like I find that definitely with some of the mentors that I've had, especially when I've opened up to dowsing and energy work with the earth, there's things that I've intuitively discovered that I have the capacity to do and how I work with it. And then it's like, I want to learn more. So I reached out to various people that had approaches that were of interest to me. And this man that I've mentioned, he's one that has lasted. And the others I've had, like, I still consider them a mentor, even though the act of teaching moments and guidance have been more of a short period. I can still reach out to them, you know,
yeah.
when it's time. Like there's also synchronicity there, I feel. Mm. So I've definitely experienced that. And I also think as we change and grow, the type of mentoring we need changes with us.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Can you describe what you do, Amanda? Because you made a few references to it. We might as well dive into what that actually is for people who might not know.
Certainly. I will attempt to do that. And I say attempt for the reason that it is a varied palette of both coaching and energy work and healing work, for the lack of a better term. That's sort of an umbrella term a lot of people resonate with. And within all of that, sort of my core connection through it all is helping to raise consciousness and returning to a higher state of love and connection with your own guidance within. So sovereignty, authenticity, and connecting to the fact that we are multidimensional beings. We aren't just this meat suit with a logical mind, that we are so much more. And I have a great passion for working with the transformation process. Like how do we become more self-aware and more sovereign in that transformation by intentionally exploring our mindset, exploring what it means to live a more authentic life. And and a lot of times when we're looking at that, we get really hit in the face with how we're not living authentically, how we're not living in from a place of true self-worth and self-love and this capacity to be an energetic, you know, being as much as our very human everyday sort of experience. So the transformation process really intrigues me, how we evolve and how we grow, and particularly with women, because that's been my personal path as well. You know, coming from a more traditional trajectory in life, but always having a deep spiritual awareness since childhood and aware of energy, aware of the vitality and aliveness of nature, and having communications, which I would term now as, you know, more shamanic, more, and in that, what that means is that all life has intelligence. All life has an energetic presence, whether it's a rock or the wind or a bird, and that it's all connected to this greater intelligence that's communicating to us and through us all the time, and us with it. And so as I started going off the beaten path and following my heart, I was finding the language to fit everything that I had sort of experienced at a young age, and as a burgeoning therapist. And I was constantly, as a background, as an occupational therapist and a degree in anthropology before that, I've been fascinated by ancient cultures and culture and identity and connection to life in all facets for a long time. As I was working in that field in a more traditional way, I always felt so hindered by the system. And there's a big focus in occupational therapy of being client-centered and client-focused, meaning, and that what is meaningful to people when they've experienced injury or disease or are differently abled now because of that, what's meaningful to them? How do they return to life and connect to life again in a way where they can be as independent as possible and engage in as meaningful a way? But within the systems that we have, you know, in our healthcare system and social services systems, it was very, very difficult to work in that way because of the limitations and the non-holistic view of human experience that way. And with that, I also kept connecting with people on a spiritual and energetic level. I was always sensing so much more with them, but it wasn't within the remit, the scope of that practice to be able to address it. And one of the topics we did, you know, train in OT was, you know, our spiritual nature. And you can certainly work from a mindfulness perspective and, you know, from a perspective of what drives our motivation and what gives us meaning. And I do that, and I work with clients in that way. But there was so much, there was more. There was more, and that's when I really honored my path of, like, I can maintain this work because I am very good at it, and I love, you know, helping people reclaim their lives in a way. But I wanted more, and I knew there was more, and that's when I started exploring and doing more spiritual training. And so doing part-time occupational therapy work and then just really retraining. I'd been a yogi since I was 18, and I had a lot of sort of altered consciousness type experiences, even through meditation. I journey very quickly. And journey is another term we'd use in shamanism or, you know, visualization. I can tap into altered consciousness very easily. And that was fascinating to me. And there were all these pieces of my own journey that I started reclaiming by going through following that spiritual path. And so I've woven those together. This is your big, long-winded answer to your question, mm-hmm. What do I do? I've woven those together to be able to work with people, in particular women, to weave the practical aspects of healing and transformation with the esoteric or the mystical, the spiritual and energetic aspects of that, because I really feel that's a big piece that's missing. And so many people have direct experience, whether it's through their dreamscape or through an experience in everyday life where they sense something that's actually energetic, but they have no idea what it is. They just sense something. Mm-hmm. Whether good or bad or anywhere in between. And so I really love educating people about their energetic nature. And that has a lot to do with how we can re-embody. And that's a very empowering thing. And we can become more sovereign when we're aware of how we are more authentically connecting with something rather than just thinking how we should connect to something from the mental state and from our past experience, if that's making any sense.
It's beautiful, and I particularly appreciate the way that you've approached this, what I'll call a bit of a hybrid model of taking some of this traditional wisdom and marrying it with the more esoteric way of looking at the world, because I imagine the all or nothing approach in either of those camps could feel inaccessible to some,
mm-hmm.
but you've managed to look at it from this wider lens, which makes you feel more accessible as, mm-hmm. as a guide and a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that arriving at this work was more of an outcome of observing these traditional models and not connecting with it, or rather going through your own transformation and experience and feeling like this is something I now need to pass on to others?
I would say a bit of both, but it would definitely be more so as a byproduct of, or direct product of my own journey when I started to depart, as I know you did at one point too, from sort of, okay, I'm on this path. What am I doing? Why am I doing this? Is this how I want to live my life? Yeah, and I absolutely share my journey through the work that I do. And that's what a lot of people resonate with. It's this sense of that came on the heels of my divorce and like really restarting my life at around the age of 34, 35 with two young children. Mm. And in the process of that 16-year relationship, I realized that I had just completely lost myself. And there are lots of beautiful experiences from within that. I don't regret it at all. And I'm very grateful for the path it's opened up for me. And at the same time, I recognized that I had strayed so far from myself. And there were a lot of also personal wounding that I needed to look at. And in order to not repeat the patterns that were unhelpful and unhealthy that, you know, were parts of the, you know, my contribution to the demise of that connection, I didn't want to repeat that. And I wanted to heal the lineage trauma that I started to see was part of that. And I didn't know that what I had experienced, you know, in childhood and the lineage of both of my parents had such an influence on the relationship that had such a direct correlation with the relationship I ended up in. Mm-hmm. And And I knew that the only thing that I had the power to truly change was myself through that process. And that both terrified me and excited me because I felt this sense of freedom to like claim my life because I had lived it for everyone else so much. And that was a byproduct of my codependent nature as well and needing to feel needed in that way. I'm an empath. I'm an intuitive. I've been since I was a child, but I didn't know what to do with that. It's also probably part of, I talk about this in my first episode of my podcast, of learning that that was part of my trauma response that I didn't know was a trauma response.
Yeah.
Right? This people pleasing and always, but I was discovering in the process of trying to heal that relationship and save it, and then that not happening and having it dissolve, I realized where my worth was all caught up in and it was all externalized. You know, it had to do with the relationships I was in and the work that I was doing and how well I was doing it. And I just, when that all shifted and changed, I was like, I'm diving in. I want my children to have a perception and an understanding that there's more than one way to go through life and that, you know, people can change and transform and to follow their hearts. And I wanted to be as present and as authentic and as embodied as I could be. And not that I wasn't before that, but there was a part of me that I didn't feel deeply connected to. And so I made a promise to myself I would never abandon myself again. And that was the process of exploring. And I was like, okay, this is my one life that I know I have right now. I know I've had many past lives, and I do believe in reincarnation. I do believe we have the capacity to recall all of that. I've had direct experience of it. I've supported clients through that. But I was like, but this is the one I'm in right now. And I want to live it freely and fully and follow my heart, not what society has taught me is the appropriate way for someone of my age and gender and education and whatever should be doing. And that started my fire of, I realized how I had sort of succumbed to this patriarchal conditioning. And yeah, over the years, it's been layer after layer. And as I've learned and developed greater skills and different skills, I've been so inspired to share it. And I'm not for everybody, and everybody's not called to this kind of experience or this type of work, but there are a lot of people who are, because a lot of people are also coming to these realizations and feeling so trapped isn't quite the right word, but feeling so minimized in their experience of life. And it doesn't feel expansive. It feels robotic and rote and going through the motions. And when we're part of the reason we're here is to experience joy and expansion and creativity and to create from new places, you know, like that's that sovereignty. It's definitely been, it's inspired me to share. And that's why there's been more of a focus with women, although I've worked with many men and who are very much experiencing the same thing, who have a very intuitive sensibility or very aware that they experience the world differently and have no one to share it with, have no place for it to be supported. Or, you know, they're trying to move through deep emotional experiences that the world doesn't support for men either. Mm. You know, so I'm very devoted to my own purpose and feeling of aliveness. And I'm also very devoted to supporting others to find a place to get traction. And start to claim their lives in a new way.
When you got to this point in your life where you recognized you needed to heal, you were in a spot where that had to happen, how did you know what the first steps were? Did you know what direction to go in, or were you just going blind through all this and seeing where it would take you?
Yeah, well, I had before this sort of like bigger expansion with the healing process happened, I had been going to see a traditional like counselor at different times. I always would reach out for support. And it was helpful, but it wasn't, because I knew so much. I was already so self-aware, but I still didn't know how to change some of the patterns that I was feeling. Yeah. So that's what took me in the more spiritual direction, because the talk therapy and the understanding of things on a cognitive level was helpful, but it hit a threshold. There was a ceiling at which I didn't feel there was much change happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I was like, I need to do something else. And then I would just like, what is calling to me? What's that feeling? Like, what am I curious about? And it was like journeying, shamanic journey, drumming. I need to connect with nature. I need some experiences that don't involve the conscious mind in the same way. There's deeper wisdom that I'm not accessing, because I knew the guidance was within myself and I just didn't know how to access it. I would have spontaneous experiences while meditating or out in nature and guidance, but I also didn't trust that, because I was taught not to trust that.
Mm.
Right? Like most people. It's like, well, that's just in your head, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And so that's when I reached out to a shamanic practitioner and I started.
Where were they located? Were you in Nova Scotia at this time?
I was, yep.
And was this person in Nova Scotia?
Yes. Yeah. 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 And so that was very validating, so that I could experience, like have language and referencing to what I had actually been spontaneously experiencing. Of course, I'd read lots over the years, and even in, you know, the yogic scriptures and things like that, and doing my yoga teacher training was another thing that really opened up myself spiritually. There's lots of referencing about pranic healing, which is the same as energy healing. Prana is energy.
Mm-hmm.
And how to do that remotely. And so then I started, I was like, okay, what else has always I've been curious about? Even when I was studying occupational therapy at McMaster, the place I always went when I had free time was this tiny little bookstore, the secondhand bookstore that had this great section on esoteric practice and energy healing and, shamanic exploration. And I was there all the time. I was like, this is where I really want to be. And I'd always go to centers and go to workshops. And I was like, okay, this, like, it's like right in my face. This is where I need to go. And it was for my own personal experience and healing. But I knew that I had that felt sense, this will be some of what I'm offering in the new iteration of Amanda's life mm-hmm. and professional work. So I got into Reiki training.
Mm-hmm.
And that just was a catalyst. It opened up my intuitive and energetic capacities beyond Reiki. And so then I had mentorship with my Reiki teacher who's in Scotland. And and then I continued to follow that feeling and like, what is inspiring me to help me heal? And then I was like, do I want to offer this? So then I would get training in it so that I could offer it, or I'd get training in something and be like, okay, I can see myself offering this in a, you know, a hybrid way. So it definitely was jumping into training opportunities, whether mm-hmm. it was a workshop or a more in-depth training, that really opened it up.
Did you grow up in Nova Scotia? Where are you from?
Yeah.
What's your early life like, Amanda?
I'm a little fishing port girl.
Yeah.
Yep. I grew up in Queens County in Port Medway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. My mother grew up in Port Medway and her parents are from that area in Queens County.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Port Medway? Have you ever been there?
Yeah. Yeah, we've driven through. We haven't rented an Airbnb there or something.
Yeah,
but
it's near Liverpool. Yeah. It's on the way to Liverpool, opposite Mill Village. I went to a tiny little school in Mill Village that was, it's an independent school now. It was grade primary to grade 8, all in one school and like maybe 200 kids at its maximum.
Same with us. We can relate.
Yeah.
Like tiny 18 people in our grad class or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Tiny, tiny town. My grandfather, my mother's father, was a welder and a lobster fisherman, not commercial, just like for family. And so I grew up there until I was 14. And my dad's from Halifax, but he met my mom in Halifax. And then they moved to Port Medway and built a house and grew up there with my brother. I have one brother, just the two of us. And then at 14, we moved to Day Spring, just outside of Bridgewater. Mm-hmm. So I went to Mahone Bay Junior High for a year and then to Parkview. And what's completely blowing my mind is that both of my kids are now in Parkview. My daughter just graduated from Parkview last year. Never in a million years did I think that my kids would end up going to the same high school as I did. And now my daughter's going to St. Mary's in Halifax. And that's where I did my first degree.
Oh, wow.
And she just got an apartment on Victoria Road, which is the same street that I got an apartment on with two of my friends.
No way.
Like, it's just, and it's not, you know, it's just all been synchronistic. It's been wild. Yeah.
So at this age in your life, growing up in small town Nova Scotia and eventually going on to university in Halifax, were any of these things that you do now on your radar at all?
I will say yes, in a way. When I lived in Port Medway, like that's where I had a lot of my early spiritual experience being, because we were outside all the time as kids. And I also saw spirits and felt the presence of spirits and saw them in,
like, ghosts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. In different houses. I used to go visiting with my mom.
Yeah.
She liked to visit some of the older people in the community that lived alone, and we'd go visit and have tea and whatever. And I speak to this in one of my episodes of the podcast, but I would feel that I would either see them or, like, with my psychic sensing, or I would feel the presence of this energies there. And I also had, communications from, I used to love going out and laying in the field, and the wind would, like, be communicating to me. And what's really wild is also, like, I was fascinated by ancient culture. So my dad always had National Geographics around. So I was always learning about ancient Egypt and other ancient cultures, ancient Greece, even African cultures. And I was so, like, when I would read things, I'd be like, I know this. Like, I'd have dreams then. And so I was having all these experiences that were very connected to this part of who I am, but I didn't really know how to make sense of it. So that was very present in that way. I forget what your question was.
I know you've talked about, like, you now have the benefit of having language to describe some of these experiences, which may make it harder to reflect on your childhood and say, well, yeah, I was introduced to these feelings, but I didn't really know what was going on. And you certainly, as you mentioned earlier, like, society wasn't probably encouraging you to
talk about
lean
it.
Into your intuition.
I didn't
intuition.
Talk about it. No, right. My mom would have been like, let's go off to the hospital with you.
Yeah. Have you found those discoveries about yourself, have they been maintained? Have they strengthened now that you have this wisdom and acceptance? Because sometimes as kids, we're not, I'll say, jaded by some of the influences of the world. And so that intuitive part of us, or the sensing of things.
Or even psychic ability.
Yeah. Like that can be stronger. But have you found, like, what's your relationship to that now? Is it stronger because you know logically more now, or is it stifled because of that?
Oh no, it's way more, and I've worked to strengthen it. Mm-hmm. So I have practices that have actually, and I've done training, and I work with mentors to strengthen to strengthen that. And yeah, so it's fascinating when we really trust and accept, like I fully accept and openly speak about this part of who I am now because I fully trust it.
Yeah.
And I know it and I've had support around it. And that's what I also love to support others with. And so like when we're, whether I'm doing one-on-one work or we're in circle together or there's an event or a gathering, we're talking about these extraordinary or non-ordinary experiences. And some of which isn't necessarily like you're seeing spirits or getting feeling a presence of another being or something like that, but it could be. But it's also just understanding that you're sensing energy and the energy of another person. And we haven't really been taught in our culture that that's normal, you know, and the energy system is very connected to the nervous system and they're communicating all the time. And it's just not something we've been taught. And especially as children, we're very, very open to all of that until it gets, you know, covered up and we're taught to just go to the mind first, go to the mind. And
not dissimilar to creativity and art.
100%.
Very different as a child. And the acceptance of it even is different. Oh, a kid made this versus an adult made this. We accept that same painting differently or whatever the expression is.
Yes. I just get what I call my spirit bumps. They're just running up my legs as you're saying that. Because, yeah, and there's a whole element of art and creativity, no matter what the medium of the creativity is, that is very divinely inspired. It's that felt sensing or knowing of like where you go into a space that is just the energy, your essence is working through you, your own divinity, your connection, whether it's like, you know, mixing some music or painting or a dance piece, or there's something otherworldly as part of you that is actually a natural part of you that's participating in that, if not guiding the process. And not, and we've been very conditioned to fear that, to ignore it, that it's not as valid or valuable, and that it's woo and hokey and whatever. And so I really try to normalize that for people. For the people that are curious about it.
For those people that may be introduced to some of these ideas for the first time, what would be a good way for them to invite in some of this openness, or maybe an example of something that we experience on the regular that is an example of following your intuition, or that's what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last two episodes of Flight of the Feminine, the podcast that I've just started, has some really good actual practical exercises that I take people through.
We'll post those in the show notes so we can link up.
Yeah, there's one that's called Thoughts Become Things. And I talk about the energetic nature of thoughts and the feeling state. And then your body is talking. Are you listening? And so as an example, though, I can give you. And I know that you can relate, and I'm sure your listeners can relate to this, no question. So you walk into a room, you've been invited to a party, or you've been invited to some gathering, and you walk in there, or you walk into a different part of the house, and you just get this feeling like, ugh, a little heebie-jeebies, like, I don't know. I all of a sudden don't feel so good in this space, like something feels a bit off, even though you're feeling fine and the people you're meeting are fine. And that's your energy body communicating with the energy in the space. Equally, you could be standing next to someone and or talking to someone maybe that you just met, or someone you see regularly, and every time you're with them you get a feeling that's off. Like you feel drained afterwards, or you just feel uncomfortable, or all of a sudden, like you can't talk as easily or something. That's an energetic experience happening. And it can be anywhere on the spectrum because it's the opposite. You walk into a place and you're like, oh my gosh, I never want to leave. I feel so good here. Mm-hmm. And it could be the same way with a person. And it's not that there's anything evil or bad happening. It's just there's frequency resonance or dissonance interacting. Because our auric field and everything to do with energy and frequency is really invisible to our naked eye, but it's felt, mm-hmm. right? So can you relate to that? Can you think about like a house you've been in or a person or a situation?
I have fireworks going off right now. And there's part of me that feels reluctant to make this about me.
No,
but
share.
It reminds me of, I'll just be very honest here. There's very few people I've encountered in my life that I just don't like. Well, I'll just put that kind of frankly. Like, mm-hmm. I'm very open to mm-hmm. whomever you are and how you show up. Every once in a while, I will encounter someone who is perfectly lovely. Like, they haven't done anything malicious to me, mm-hmm. or I have no background with this person. But there's just this feeling of I just can't get there with you.
Can't connect. Yep.
And it's actually very uncomfortable to feel that way because the logic brain kicks in and says, you have no reason to dislike this person, or mm-hmm. you have no reason to feel uncomfortable.
And usually judgment comes in there as well. Like, oh, what's your problem?
Totally judging myself, right. Totally blaming myself, mm-hmm. feeling guilty. Mm-hmm. Thinking about all these other people that are welcoming this person in, and why can't I get there? And I would love to hear your feedback on what that means, how to manage that, mm-hmm. how to work through it. Anything you have to say would be so comforting.
Well, and it could be a number of things. But first of all, like, as I was saying, our auric field sort of extends about the length of your arms when you put your arms out.
Okay.
It's like an oval sort of egg shape.
And do we all have our own color?
Oh, it changes.
Okay.
Colors. There's sort of bandwidths within it, but that's about the radiance of it. It radiates out around us, sort of 360, and above and below us. And so that's hitting a space before you're in it physically, like with your body, right? So that our auras are mingling together all the time, and you know, it's interesting to note if there's a pattern, because if it's just a one-off, you've met that person, depending on, they might be in a really dark space inwardly, right? They may be appearing to be very happy and engaged and interested to be where they are. But if energetically and energetics are connected to our emotional and psychological state, if they've been experiencing a lot of stress, they're in a deep space of self-loathing or self-rejection, their energetic field and their chakras, the wheels in the center of it, can be very retracted. Mm-hmm. And it makes their field really dense. If you think about that literally, and I could show you, if I had my copper rods, I could show you how your field opens and expands and contracts based on even how you're speaking to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so if this person has experienced or has unprocessed grief or unprocessed anger that they're suppressing, and they've been in a period of suppression, their field will be really contracted. So the flow of their energy isn't very smooth. It's not very open. And they have a guardedness in their energy, which is what you could have been bumping up against. Mm. And sometimes it can be harder for people who are very open and loving when someone is experiencing the opposite of that, and a lot of times it's self-directed, they can be very rejecting of your energy, mm-hmm. not consciously.
Right.
And so you feel like you're bumping up against, literally feel like you're bumping up against something, right? Or someone, and you can't get in. And it could also be that you are picking up on that density and it doesn't feel very good to you. Mm. And it's not because there's anything wrong with that person. And that, you know, they could also be, though, when people are in that denser vibration and frequency of things, they can get into a lot of judgmental thinking. And we can sense that even if they don't say anything.
Yeah.
So that could be part of what you're bumping up against. Mm. And so if someone has a very dense energy field, and yours is more open and expanded. It's, you know, a little bit like oil and water. It doesn't go well, doesn't flow well together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you see those energy fields, or can you?
People can. I don't see them psychically as much as I feel it, but I can mm-hmm. demonstrate it. It's I teach dowsing, which is a form of energy work, and using copper rods. It used to be, most people know it as water witching or mm-hmm. water divining and looking for water, or anything subterranean that you can't really see. It's fascinating. But what I could show you is, you know, I could show you, if you were standing in front of me, I can walk towards you and ask for the rods to pick up where the outer edge of your auric field is, and they will mark it. And then we could talk about something, and then I could test again, and it would show me how your field has changed. Because it will expand and retract based on what you're experiencing emotionally, psychologically, physically. If you're really physically sick, your field is mm-hmm. going to have a different shape. Dr. Emoto, who is a Japanese scientist, he died, I think last year, has some really fascinating books and work research he did on water molecules and energy, and how we speak to water or vibration. Like, he played different types of music, and he would put water in different vials and have people speak to the water, or even just write the word hate on the vial, love on another one, patience on another. And he tested the crystalline structure of the water molecules and saw how the patterns changed and how there was symmetry and dissymmetry. And this was also related to, you know, how we could imagine our field changing, because also we are, how much water are we? Like 70 to 85% water. And how thought, language all has energy and impacts that would also be a way you could see how your field changes based on how you're talking to yourself. Some people do see it. So I don't have that capacity. There's different types of psychic abilities. They're called clairs, clairaudience, clairvoyance. And so some people hear things clairaudiently. Some have claircognizant, which is like this knowing of information. Clairvoyance is that ability to see, but it's a psychic seeing. It's not a seeing with the visual eyes. But there are technologies now that are capturing the electromagnetic frequencies of the auric field, and everything, like plants have auric fields, like everything has an auric field, and they're able to capture them and translate that in visual in terms of forms. That's why people think of colors, because you will see different bandwidths of colors. And there's different theories on whether that's consistent, you know, that the chakras are these specific colors or emotions are these specific colors. And I've experienced it as very individual to the person. And there are some patterns that you can note, but that it's not always the same. So there's ways to capture it.
Yeah. We've recently come out of a period in history that is unique, having experienced this global pandemic. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us, that means we were reevaluating our lifestyle, our work in a lot of cases. How have you found, for the person that maybe is in this state of reflection, recalibration, we look for, I'll say, we know that we want to improve, or that something is different. Like, we want to move into this next chapter of our lives, but we don't always know the questions to ask ourselves to get there. Do you have any tips or questions themselves that might be a good thing to consider or ask of ourselves if we're in a phase of transition in our life?
Yeah, I can think of a few. One is, if the money didn't matter, mm-hmm. what would you be doing?
Great question.
How would I be spending my time? How would I be creating with life if money wasn't an issue? Mm-hmm. That will give people a sense of what's their heart really desires, what their soul desires, and where their gifts are, like why they came here, like what, where they're meant to engage and make a difference. That's a big one. As not to say that, you know, there aren't steps to take once you get some answers, but it's like starting to connect on that heart and soul level, because I think the whole, yeah, global experience of that pandemic really shook people to the core, you know, and made them question a lot. So, yeah. And what's of true value? Mm-hmm. Connection, community. How many people experience such isolation, you know, and disconnection? So that reconnection to the heart and the soul, like what is driving what you're doing? Does it light you up? So that would be my next question. What lights me up? They might be, you know, similar, but if the money didn't matter, how would you be spending your time? How would you be creating your life? And then what lights you up? Like what makes you feel alive?
These are great. And I would encourage anyone listening to really take some time and think about answering those.
Yeah.
Because if not those questions, how are you going to get more specific about where you're going?
Yeah. What lights me up? And it may not be, okay, well, I'm going to do that direct thing. But what about, so I often give my clients this example when they're feeling kind of lost and don't needing a reorientation or redirection. Like they feel like there's something missing. And I'll say, well, make a list of all of the types of activities and things you've experienced, even from childhood, include the remote stuff that that you loved doing. Not because you were, not the things that you were told you had to do. Like if you were forced to practice the piano or the guitar, or you were forced to be on the soccer team, like you might have, if you did enjoy that, but what part of it did you enjoy? So the first thing is like, make the list of all the things that you've done in the past, even if you're not doing them now, and the things that you're doing now, experiences that you love, that make you get in that zone, the flow. Mm. You know, like I'm sure, Mike, when you get in the zone of a certain song or a riff or something, and you're just like lost in it, right? It's like, so write down the things that give you that, even if it's just for a minute. And then the next step is, what is that activity or experience giving you on a feeling, from a feeling place? Is it helping you feel free? Is it helping you feel strong? Is it helping you connect to being brave? Is it like creating a sense of connection to something bigger? Like, what is it that it's giving you? Because somebody might say, oh, I love running. I just absolutely love running. I never miss running. But oftentimes we stop there. We just like, we know we love running. Mm. What about running gives, like, what is it that gives you the love? Is it that you love the feeling of going fast, you know, of feeling the strength in your body? Because all of that information is what you want, whatever you're actually doing for your life's work, to have.
I want to ask you, Mike, because you have been in the same creative work for a long time.
Yeah.
With Amanda's questions, is there anything from your childhood that comes to mind of an activity or a feeling that brought you pleasure that you're not doing now because you've pursued this singular thing to some extent?
Hi, friends of Mike and Kristen. My name is Nancy Regan, and it's a pleasure and privilege to be a sponsor of this podcast, because I love the way these two creators show up. I spent a big chunk of my life on TV, projecting an air of confidence to an audience of more than 250,000 people. The spotlight lit me up, but the truth is, for most of that time, I didn't feel my own light. I was wearing a social mask to show the world I had it all together, even when I felt close to falling apart. The fear of failure haunted me because I didn't want anyone to know the secret I harbored, that I was not enough. Not smart enough, not talented enough, just not enough. The good news is I've left that lens behind. I traded in my inner imposter for a life of liberating authenticity. It hasn't been an easy path, but man, is it worth it. I share my story with a whopping dose of vulnerability in my book, From Showing Off to Showing Up. As I see it, showing off is living a life according to the expectations of others, craving approval. Showing up is, here I am, take me or leave me. And the beautiful, gratifying, and deeply comforting result is that I've heard from hundreds of readers who say they see themselves in my story. If something about this resonates with you, come along for the journey. From Showing Off to Showing Up is available in paperback, ebook, and now audiobook, read by me, of course. I promise I'll show up. Will you?
The only other thing probably would be some type of athletics. Like I used to get that from sports. Like I'd play basketball for 4 hours a day, just me out in the court taking shots, like this repetitive thing, which now when I look back on it, I realize it was almost like a meditation.
Right.
It was just this repetitive. I'd take a 15-foot shot, go grab the ball, come back, and it would just hours would go by and I wouldn't even think of anything else. It's just the act of doing that. And I still do that to some extent. Like in the summer, I'll go over to the court for maybe a...
And you also meditate in a more, I guess, traditional way, or what we might think about meditation.
Yeah, ups
so that's
and downs
something too.
With it, yeah. But yeah, that's like,
I love that.
Music has always been my, I guess at the same time, I discovered music and sports really. Like I started to play guitar when I was about 13. And that's when I started to take sports seriously as well. And I think, again, I wasn't recognizing it in the moment, but it was just a joyful thing for me.
Yeah.
And something that made me present. And that's a big thing now. Like no one's present now. And myself included, I find like I have to release, I put a song out. So I have to make posts on social media. I have to monitor that. I have to respond to all the comments. Yeah. I have to be on different forms of social media, checking in, and like a whole day goes by. And all I did was look at a screen and communicate with people that are, well, could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And so finding these moments of presence where I can actually be in the studio and I have an ID and I sit at the piano, I move my hats away from the piano and I start to play or pick up a guitar and I come up with an idea on the spot and I don't know where it came from. And I'm just completely focused on that activity. Or I go over to the court and I just take some shots for a couple hours and maybe have some music in my headphones, or maybe I'm listening to the birds and the cars go by. But finding those moments is really important and harder than ever, for sure.
Yeah, I love that so much, because it is that that presence can be very expansive. It's not the same as like being on the edge of a thrill of something, you know, like if you're, you know, skiing and you're downhill skiing and you're just about to let go, you're at the top and you're going down, that can make you feel really alive and all of that, and very present, and you have to be, otherwise you're gonna wipe out and kill yourself maybe. But that act of presence that can be really expansive, but that goes, it is what it's doing is it, that expansion is inward, like it's grounding you. So like in that moment of playing basketball and being very present in your body and doing that shot over and over, there's a sense of an inward expansion that comes with presence that feels very fulfilling. It's like you get to just be alive in that moment, like just feeling that aliveness, you know? And we do go through life so much, especially if you're an entrepreneur and you have a lot of things to manage. I know that very well. That your attention is put in many different places, and it's how to invite that sense of presence even in those things. And if that isn't happening as much, it's essential to have those experiences and make sure there's space for them, whether it's sitting meditation or going and playing basketball, because that's can also open you up to the inspiration. It reconnects you back to your being state. You know, that's beyond all the doing. Even though you're doing an activity, it's a different state of being in it.
Yeah.
And which this is so nourishing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you've, I know you've experienced this. I don't even have to ask you, but with us getting caught up in the busyness, we know that it's those moments of quiet
mm-hmm.
that are often where the best work happens anyways.
Yeah. Oh, I guess.
But it's so hard to allow it.
Yeah. Well, I have to, for my just soul nurturement and my mental health, I have to be out in the woods or outside every day mm-hmm. at some point. And whenever I'm walking in the woods or I'm out in nature, I get so many downloads. I get so many inspirations when I'm in that space because I intentionally give myself enough time to get into my body. So, you know I usually need a minimum of 15 minutes because mm-hmm. that first 5 minutes, my head is still just letting go of whatever else I was just doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have to be an hour. That's the other thing, but it's the consistency that's key, I feel. And I see that with my clients. So you don't have to have an hour meditation. You can have a profound, nurturing experience in 5 minutes. If you can be consistent with that 5 minutes, it's even better.
Mm. And building that trust with yourself.
Yeah.
I'm going to show up for devotion. Myself tomorrow, even if it is for 5 minutes, I will do this thing.
Yeah. And I really encourage people to explore the energy of their language, because the word commitment for some people is a very big trigger word because there's, if I don't do it, I'm a failure. Like if I've committed to this and I don't follow through, or here's another thing I'm not following through on, rather than when there are these things that are important to us that help us come into a state of presence, reconnect to our spirit. I invite the word devotion. Mm. I'm devoting, you know, this time to who I am or to my ability to rest. You know, devotion has a different quality altogether.
That's a great reframe.
Now, somebody else might have a trigger to that because it might be too religious in nature for them if they've had any sort of poor experience in a religious framework. So it is really about what word works for you that helps you settle into it and it doesn't set you up for some repercussion if you don't do it, right?
Yes. No, that's a good point of clarity.
Yeah.
What's it like? Nova Scotia, place we all live, place we love, I assume.
Yes.
I assume you love.
I love it. I always knew I'd come back here. I've lived far, far away and then came back. Yeah.
It's an amazing province, the mm-hmm. most supportive people in the world, and the most supportive part of the world, I find. It also, it's very traditional, and I'm curious as to how your line of work and these ideas you have gone over with people in your life and community, because they are a bit outside the box. Mm-hmm. And again, Nova Scotia is not at the necessarily the forefront of ideas like this. Like there are obviously people here who are partaking in it and in them, but how has the world around you reacted to these ideas that are a bit outside the norm?
Mm. Well, I do work internationally.
Yeah.
So, cause I work with people remotely, virtually. So, there is that capacity to work beyond this community, which, is wonderful too.
Yeah.
I have to say two things. One is that the response has been incredible and supportive, because there is a high number of very spiritual people in Nova Scotia in particular. And of course, there's always going to be people who are like, they're just not interested. That's going to be the way anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree that Nova Scotia and sort of the Maritimes in some ways can be a bit more conservative. That would be the word that comes to mind, mm-hmm. Yet still very open-hearted and very supportive. But there might be a little reservation or hesitation. However, the number of people who have showed up for workshops or have reached out for one-to-one support over the number of years are like, oh my God, thank God. There's somebody who I can talk to about this. Mm. I never could, you know, because there's a catchment of people in our communities that have had direct experiences that are non-ordinary, that they don't talk about because of a fear of being judged, a fear of being made fun of, a fear of, you know, being that deep-seated fear that all humans have of being ostracized in some way. And so it's, I find people are really have a great sense of relief when, and it might take for some people a little warming up to some of the themes and topics that, you know, might come up or are offered. But that people are generally really relieved that there's not just me, but the other people openly sharing about this, and that it's not, you know, when it comes to energy work and spiritual exploration, that it's actually part of our nature. It's a natural part of who we are. We've just not been really taught about it. So it's a whole missing piece of our human education, I feel, that's so necessary, and especially now. So I haven't had any direct, you know, pushback in any way that way. And I think also because, I mean, I am also a therapist, and there's a lot of therapists that not only occupational therapists, but psychologists and other types of counselor that are starting to include more somatic-based therapy, more energy work, even Reiki or aromatherapy and reflexology and acupressure and awareness of how the body and energy is part of our makeup, you know, in terms of our mental and emotional and psychological health. And that you could frame that in a spiritual, from a spiritual lens or language or not. It doesn't change that it's there. You know, so it's really, I, like you, Kristen, I, you know, I am very approachable. I have always been, I've been the person growing up, you know, I was friends with everybody. I wasn't into the cliques. I, you know, I had friends in every group. That's just the way that I always operated. I didn't believe in that. And even still, that I meet people where they're at. So I'm not going to be talking to somebody about dowsing or deep psychic work if that's not what they're coming to me for.
Sure.
You know, I'm like, this is part of my toolkit, and this is part of what I have to offer. But if they're coming to me because they're going, they're in a deeply disembodied place because they've been through a great amount of stress and depression and are really, or have come through like a big tragedy or whatever, and they are looking for support that they just, you know, they've heard from somebody else, or they just don't feel like they're getting the support. Like, I know what that feels like when I've gone through the traditional approach and it's just not been enough to help me. Then I meet them where they are, but I also am upfront with them and say, I want to teach you about how your nervous system and your energy body is communicating to you, because that empowers you. I'm not here to heal you. There's nothing broken in anyone. There's where things have gotten out of alignment, where we have adopted and are being adopted beliefs and approaches to things that maybe haven't been helpful and never potentially genuinely our own. And that's where we get in trouble, because that's where we feel disconnected. We don't know how to make decisions that feel right for ourselves. So there's a huge part of, you know, the work that I do is also mindset and belief systems, limiting belief work. And but we can't ignore the body, because the body's always communicating to us. Even when our mind says, yes, I'm going to do that, some, our body might be saying, no, 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 no. But if we've been taught to ignore that and override it because so-and-so won't like it, or, you know, you're supposed to like this, that's what you signed up for, then we've learned to ignore those parts of the communication, our communication system, that's really innate to who we are. And so I feel it's really imperative that people get reconnected to that. And I can share it in a way that's very accessible and not all esoteric and woo.
It's true leadership to be, just to have so much conviction in the work that you do, in particular when it's not the norm. Like, that takes a lot of courage, and the work you're doing is so important.
Thank you.
And I know most recently you too have started a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll finish up our chat with telling us a little bit about what led you to want to do this kind of work and the experience you've had so far in podcasting.
Yeah, thank you. It's super exciting. I launched it on my birthday in January. Flight of the Feminine. And it may seem sort of more geared to those who identify as, feminine in their nature, but it's really useful for anyone to reconnect with the feminine principle and the feminine archetypal energies. I'm going to talk about all kinds of things on it, but what I mean about that is this reconnection to our felt senses, our sensory body, our intuition, our more multidimensional nature, because that is more of our feminine aspect. And we all have the feminine and the masculine as part of who we are in terms of energy and archetype. Doesn't matter what gender you are, that's present in us. And the feminine is that part that guides us through feeling and helps us explore our emotions and that creative component of things as well. So I guess back in 2020, I've had people mention when podcasting really started, I'd had clients and people who were connecting with me saying, "When are you going to start a podcast? When are you going to start a podcast?" And I was like, "Oh God, I don't know."
I'm not surprised. Yeah. You are so natural, so talented at this. Just throwing that in, we'll let you finish. But this does not come as a surprise that everyone is encouraging you.
Part of my human design, when I look at when I've had my astrology looked at in human design, I say, you should be speaking and writing. And yes. I was like, oh, okay, well, this is one way I can do that. And back in 2020, I had this random call from this podcasting company out of the States called Meet the Elite. And they were looking for somebody and interviewing people to come on as one of their spiritual coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a couple interviews with them and, they tested the ratings and all the things. And they were like, "You're getting great results, and they were sort of headhunting me a bit to come on. And of course there was going to be a fee to get to go on at first, but then I would eventually get paid to do it and go live and answer questions and stuff for people live, like a radio show. And it was very intriguing and flattering at the same time, but I was really watching my ego around that. And I was also like, does this feel aligned?
Mm-hmm.
Who is this company? Like, what are they all about? It's very important to me that there's integrity and intention in everything that I do and why I'm doing it and who I'm doing it with. So when I did a little bit of research, I was like, I can find out a bit. And then I was just like, it's just not feeling right. Like, I don't feel like this is what I'm meant to do. And so I said no. And well, they didn't like that. They didn't want to take no for an answer. So they, they'd send another manager or somebody else. And they're like, and I was just like, I just don't feel this is integrous. Like, I just feel like they want me to, I don't know. Like, I just didn't, I felt like they were wanting me to play a part is how I felt. Mm-hmm. And then, so this guy, I remember I was with my daughter in Halifax. I don't know if you're getting back to school clothes or something like that. And he's calling my cell phone. I'm like, I can't talk right now. I am with my daughter. I will call you back. And he's just like, this is the last chance. This is the blah, blah, blah. And he's going on. And they were so pushy about it. And that I didn't like either. Mm-hmm. And then when I called him back, this one sentence was in amongst everything else. Will you look the part?
Oh,
and this
confirming
was
confirming your feelings.
And I was like, haha, right.
Yeah.
No, thank you. And I was like, right. They've checked out my website. I look spiritual enough, or I look the part that's going to be good for them to promote their ratings or whatever. And I was like, no, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. So I was like, thanks, but no thanks. And then, of course, the world went crazy during that time. And like everybody else, I was pivoting to, continue to support my business and my clients and my kids and everything else. And then like, it just kept coming up. It kept coming up. And I was like, how can I don't, I love the one-to-one work. I love running retreats. I love having collective experience because we need to learn from one another. The time of having the guru is over. We need leadership. We need guidance, but we are our own guru. We have the wisdom, and I'm very passionate about reconnecting people to that. And that, not that we don't need teachers and guides at times, but we need to start retrusting ourselves. And I love all of that, but I was like, how do I share this more broadly? How do I share what I share in one-to-one session work and in small group in a greater way? I don't want to gatekeep what I know and what can help people and help people become more empowered. And it's not because they need the power put in them from outside. That empowerment is an invocation from inside. But we need information. We need practices. We need experiences that take us out of the ordinary that we're used to. And that's why I love transpersonal work and transformative, like embodied experiences where you experience literally something different. It's not just think about it or have somebody tell me. And that's how it came about. And then I was like, you know what? I think this is the way I need to go next. And I don't know how I'm going to pay for it. I don't know how I'm going to do it tech wise or how I'm going to fit it in, but I'm going to make it happen. And I reached out to a woman who helped me set up my very first website. And I was like, I'd been following you guys too. And I think it was around the same time I reached out to you when I, made the decision to, I had gotten some information from this woman who'd helped me with my website. She said, check out this company, Story Studio Network. They're a smaller company, and I know the CEO, it's a woman-owned business and blah, blah, blah. So I reached out to them and I had an interview with them about what my intentions were. And I was just like, it was another moment of where you take a leap, right? A leap on every level. And I was like, I know I'm meant to do this. I don't know where it's taking me. I don't know necessarily how to, you know, get the monetary return from it, but that wasn't the primary motivation. The motivation was, how do I share more broadly and reach more people? And yes, of course, have them, you know, maybe connect with me in other ways, but how do I help community and build community around all of these topics that in my industry, Mike, and the people that are in my community currently and the people that do connect with me around the offerings, like, this is our norm. Like, all the things that I'm talking to you guys about, this is our normal life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas for other people, it's like, what the fuck is she talking about? Like, what? She sees ghosts and talks to the land and does what? You know, and that's just a part of it. But it's a fascinating part of it. And I love the synchronicity. And this is how we're moving in more of this time to come, is to follow the synchronicity. And that's more heart and soul and energy led. So then I happen to meet you through this local gathering at Togetherland, through another beautiful human. And I had come across your podcasts over a year and a half ago, and I loved your accessibility, your down-to-earthness, and yeah, I just loved everything about how you were sharing. And then I reached out to you and said, oh my God, I need to know more about podcasting. I just jumped in with both feet, which I typically do.
Well, this all sounds very familiar to our experience too, so you're not alone in that. Yeah. I also love that the no is what led you to the yes for yourself.
Yes, yes.
Like, that's an amazing lesson in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And again, this is just work that's so meant to be for you. I know that Mike and I, we often talk too about the intricacies of podcasting and, yeah, the monetization and what is this really for. But we have found after 2 years, even now, the things that were important to us in the beginning remain. Like, it still really is about sitting with people like you. Like, how do you put a price tag on that? How is no value. It's so valuable that there can't be that attachment. But also, it does take a lot of time and energy and planning. And
oh, gosh, I had no idea.
Consistency.
Oh, I had no idea. Even with having the support of a team, it's like all the prep and then actually, you know, having, I wanted to have, I love themes. I don't know if you guys like working with themes. I love working with themes. So like having this themed sort of story arc where things would lead into one another, and just thinking about what is my intention. I'm just like, I want to offer some very practical things as well. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, then there's the review and the editing of the show afterwards, and the show notes, and then the promotion, and then the, you know, all of the SEO and all that stuff. And it's like, holy cats, that's a lot.
How have the episodes been received so far?
Incredible. Yeah. I actually, full disclosure, radical honesty, I don't get a lot of time to listen to podcasts because I'm working. I'm a single parent. Mm-hmm. And I have a dog. I run my own household. I bring in my own wood. Just like, mm-hmm. And even though that I really value my quiet time, and I need it. I'm an extrovert introvert, so I need that recalibration time and space and quiet. So I'm not always, even when I have space, I'm not always listening to things. I just need to be. So I didn't really know what good response rate was for ratings and things like that. But and maybe you guys can share, because maybe I don't know if it's good or not in your own experience.
If you're doing it, you're doing good.
Yeah. Well, the first trailer and first episode, there was over 120 odd downloads.
Yeah.
And there's been there's only three episodes out right now, and there's over 400 downloads or
good
so now. So I don't know if that's good or not good, but I'm just like, well, I hope so. I want it to reach people.
Someone said to us, picture you're having a party or a gathering where you're giving the talk, which is essentially your podcast. Imagine if 120 people came to your event.
Right.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like,
good metaphor.
And also that I believe it's 7 or 8 episodes is the average length that podcasters stick with the medium.
Okay.
So if you surpass that, you're already in the top 25% of podcasts in the world.
Oh, wow.
So it's really going back to consistency.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it we have found. And we've been given a lot of information. We're just back from the first of a few conferences that we're going to.
Yeah.
And it's, they taught us everything from monetization to promotion to guests getting on with other marketing tools, that kind of thing, getting sponsorship.
Right.
It was a little overwhelming in that we came back reinvigorated, like very excited. We now have all these new tools in our toolbox, but also can't do everything at once and still have to be putting episodes every week out while we're trying to recalibrate some of these things.
I hear you.
So there's an evolution to it, mm-hmm. which we've kind of rolled with. We've given ourselves grace. We've allowed ourselves to say, well, we're the hosts. We get to change things if we want to. But I really connected with, because I know the monetization part is often a goal for mm-hmm. podcasters, because we don't get paid anything to show up and do all of this work.
Yeah.
And all behind the scenes.
And it looks so easy.
Looks very easy.
And there's
two of us.
Yeah.
And one of you. Yeah. So there's that too.
And even like your artwork and your graphics and your getting the audiograms and all of that ready to go, and on making sure it's on all the platforms. Like,
I
had no idea, even with the team, I was like, holy crap, this is a lot.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
There was a room we were in, and the presenter asked the question to the room of maybe, I don't know, 50 people, I'm guessing, but how many of you have made over $1 million this year on your podcast? And Mike and I were kind of like, nobody. And half the room raised their hand. And we were like, what the hell? But we learned that their podcast was really more of a tool, like a funneling tool, if you're familiar with the business concept of funneling, in that, which I feel would work perfectly because you have your solid foundation business and what you're offering. The podcast is like the marketing tool to some extent. But it's this place for people to really get to know you and the work you offer and how you show up. Mm-hmm. And may lead to sales in other areas of your business. So I assume some of these people who made $1 million, it's really from the product they're selling, but drew their audience in through the podcast.
Right.
That would be a top tip, especially for someone in your position mm-hmm. who has that thing to draw people into.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm in the process of creating some more like passive offers because there's only one of me. Mm-hmm. And, right. you know, wearing all the hats that I do, it's hard to be more in service in like physically. there's a point at which, you know, I have to have regroup time. Mm-hmm. And as you know, in order to create, you need space. So in order to have some passive income to support those times to create, you know, more, you know, whether it's a course or a workshop or a book or whatever, there still needs to be mm-hmm. some dollars coming in during those creative times when you're not actively, it's like changing up the model. And also, yeah, so I'm in the process of all of that too right now and trying to restructure things so that there is more of that,
yeah,
that funnel, and hopefully people will be more curious about some of the work that I'm putting out there.
And I think a great thing about your podcast is that you really nail your niche. You know what mm-hmm. you're doing, you know what it is, and you can really target the people who are into that world and that community. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's probably another big thing we've taken away from the first conference we went to, is to niche down as far as you can.
Yeah.
And to just go after that particular audience. So mm-hmm. you don't have to try to win over everyone. Like, you're not going to be trying to get rural fishermen in Nova Scotia, right? They're not your target audience, so you don't have to worry about
family background.
Everyone has a different audience, and you know what that audience is, mm-hmm. you create the content that you know that they'll enjoy, and you're after them, and they'll come to you because that's the space for them. You create the space for them to really thrive in, and they'll find you.
Yeah. And it was really important to me to do that. And I was very encouraged to do that. And that can be hard because I have so many interests and, you know, it's like you want to serve everyone, but that's just not practical, really. Yeah. So that was really helpful. Validation, because that was the information I was given too. And it's very important to me within each of the episodes to offer something, not only just to kind of get the wheels turning and for people to start to self-reflect and self-inquire, but that there's some actual practices that is possible. And it won't be in every single episode, but I've been trying to incorporate just some basic, really accessible things to start for people to have to practice at home, to start to connect to that embodiment, to, you know, how to, episode 3, which is your body is talking to you. Are you listening? I take people through like your body yes and body no, like on just a basic level. It can be very nuanced. And some people would say that's your F yes and your F no, but it's like very much like, again, your higher self or your deeper self, your intuition, your instinct communicates through the body and through energy. And we need to know when that's not actually matched with what our brain and our mind is telling us what to do. And it doesn't mean that it's necessarily a hard no, but it could be like a no enough to like pause and look at, if I'm saying yes to this, why is my body reacting this way? Mm-hmm. Why doesn't it feel like a yes? Why does it feel like I'm not 100% comfortable? And really learn to take the time to lean into that. So when, you know, you're talking about niching down and, you know, my focus on the feminine is because, I mean, everyone in our society, I feel, has been disembodied, like disconnected from that sense of wisdom that's within their being in their body, but women have just such a high rate of suppression of their internal guidance. The good girl syndrome and people pleasing is so prevalent. I mean, that's the work that I am, you know, in practically every day with clients, you know, that I'm in session with, is like, you know, being able to discern what it, like, what is the authentic decision that's right for you in this moment?
Yeah. You know? And I think offering those tips that people can integrate into their own life simply by listening to a podcast is such a huge strength that you already have going for you. It's a practical takeaway.
Yeah. And I'm thrown in the notes, like if I've got a book reference or if it's a guest, I've asked those guests for other references, like their top three books that they would recommend, you know, that kind of thing, so that there's other resources, because we need resources differently than we have in the past. We need different types of resources, and we need things to be a little easier, you know?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, I think it's possible. Yeah. I know it's possible. Yeah. But we also have to cultivate that in our own our own lives. So yeah, and I'm so grateful. I can't wait to hear more. I know we're gonna have more conversation, but I'd love to hear more about your podcasting.
I feel experience. Like you're such a beautiful embodiment of leading by example. I think there's a fine line between educating people by determining maybe what they should do or what they should think, but you practice this in your real life, and that's enough for people to be drawn to the work you're doing and learn something from you by seeing how life has unfolded for you, how saying no can actually lead to a yes. I loved earlier too how you said we're more than just our meat suits. Like if that is not on somebody's merch soon, then it's a missed opportunity. Yeah. So
yes, I'm working on that too. I'm like on my shop. Yeah. No, I have quite a few sayings I'd love to put.
I bet. These great one-liners.
Yeah. The meat suit. Yeah. It's a common joke in our spiritual community.
Yeah.
And it's so important to me as well, like to be in integrity. And I don't take anybody through any of the practices or spiritual experiences or tools that I have, whether it's breath work or, you know, guided visualization or inner child work. It's none of it isn't anything I've done, not done myself.
Right.
Everything I take people through, I have deep, direct experience with. And so I feel very confident in my capacity to hold safe space for people to explore things that they're not accustomed to exploring. And that can really help people expand their like life and consciousness around life itself. So, and I think that's extremely important, especially in an age where there is like a real popularity, for lack of a better word, of, you know, spiritual practices and breath work and everything that's, you know, becoming very popular, and that's really good. And it can also be something else, just something else that people go to and kind of get addicted to going to. And it doesn't, if they're not integrating what they're getting out of the experience, then it's no different than, you know, going for a drink or going for a hit of something else. It's it gives them that spiritual high, or it gives them that spiritual opening. But then if there's no support for that, or there's no integration time and support for the integration, it's not really serving them. And
couldn't agree more.
And there's a lot of you know, formats of things that aren't really people. I just feel like as being in the role that I am as a therapist and as a coach and all those hats and labels, it's like I have to keep doing my work as well to be in the greatest capacity to support other people doing the deep kind of work, the trauma work, the re-embodiment work and all of that, because it's big. And so it's really important, you know, for me to make sure that I am taking care of myself and I am living like I walk my talk. Yes. I just don't. And when I catch myself out of that, then I'm accountable. And I'm like, I'm doing too much right now. I am not sleeping well. I am not, this is like, I gotta make a change. And maybe I can't see as many people this week because I'm not just going to show up. Because of that, I need to communicate to them and be real and be honest and authentic, because that's another big part of our culture. That's like, just put on a brave face and just keep going. You committed to this, do it, you know, and that has not proven to support us.
Yeah, let's try something new, you guys. Imagine that.
Imagine that. And this is the new earth era of creating things completely new that, you know, we haven't had in, I would say, quite a long time. You know, it's an exciting time and it's a really difficult time all mixed in. Mm-hmm. And that's what I constantly, my messaging is, it's both and. It's not one or the other anymore. We're going to have... This morning, we're going to be on this high because they have this amazing experience or this connection. And then this, in the afternoon, you're going to be in the depth of grief because of what's going on in another part of the world. Like, there's no hiding that or trying to compartmentalize it. It's we need to allow space for all of it and recognize our humanness in that.
Yeah, things can coexist. It's we're very much in a one or the other type of way of thinking.
That very polarized. Yeah.
I'm happy to hear that, yes, we're at least... considering some of these new ways of thinking. And so if our listeners would like to work with you, listen to your podcast, find out more about you, where should we send them?
Amanda-ring.com.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's all there and all the links are there. All the ways to work one-to-one, the podcast link is there. It's on all the listening platforms. Flight of the Feminine is the name of the podcast.
Amazing. We so appreciate you being here. Sharing your wisdom and positive energy, positive vibes.
Yeah.
Thanks for showing up and being an amazing person, Amanda.
Well, thank you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
For inviting me into your little sacred
It's our pleasure.
Podcast pod.
Yeah. So glad we did. Hey, cheers, folks. Thanks for tuning in.
Woo. Thank you.
There you go. Our chat with Amanda Ring. Great gal. Honored to have her in our space here, giving us all this amazing information.
We're very fortunate, and we have the blanket that we offered to Amanda while we were recording this episode that you've made the comment a few times, like, oh, this smells so nice, which means Amanda also smells so nice.
Yeah, it has a bit of the beautiful scent of Amanda on it for forever until we wash it.
Until we wash it, but we're going to hold off. So we are just so lucky to have her join us in the studio. We hope to have her around the gallery this summer and just invite everybody to follow along Amanda's podcast, Flight of the Feminine. All those links are in our show notes, of course. And by following podcasts like her, rating, reviewing, subscribing, same as you do with Mike and Kristen, that's just going to help spread the word that she's putting out there to the world and have more flow to her way.
Well, folks, thanks for tuning in, and we appreciate each and every one of you. You're all amazing and talented and special and beautiful and smart and kind and badasses. What else, Kristen?
Cute.
Cute.
Yeah, you're all so cute.
And strong. And quick. Mm-hmm. You're all very quick people.
Glittery.
Glowy.
Yeah. Sparkly. Okay, do a fade out here. Can you fade as we keep describing people?
It's fading.
So pretty. So pretty. You are enough. We love you. Bye.